Yes, hello, come on in and welcome. It is time once again for another episode of Less Than Jays as we enter June. It's time to enter June. We are, June means we're close to it being the middle of the season. I think we're like a third of the way through. How many games
has this damn team played? Last week was 50-something, so we gotta be getting close.
I think we are.
They've played 57 games.
57 times 2 is 114, plus 57 is
171. So yeah, third of the way.
We did it. Look at us mathing it up. Lots to get to. The Jays are back on the winning ways. They're playing teams that aren't in the American League East, so they're winning. So that's nice. But we would be remiss. We'd be remiss because the AL Central isn't real. And neither is the NL Central. It's not real. We'll get into it. But
I mean, no divisions are real except maybe the West's.
Yeah, maybe
the NL East is bad. The NL Central is bad. The AL Central is bad. The AL West is like fine, and the NL West is fine.
Yeah, valid. We would be remiss if we didn't start with this fucking Anthony Bass thing. And
this fucking Anthony Bass thing is the correct way to introduce that, I think.
So. How to start with this properly. Fuck off if you have any sort of warm feelings towards Anthony Bass would be my first thought. If you didn't see it, Anthony Bass shared Instagram story that is, the people that cover this team, I think, do a fairly good job of addressing this. They talk about it being an anti-LGBTQ 2S plus message. I want to be very specific here and sort of share some of the things that are being said in this video. Just so you know that it's not like this wasn't like a Anthony Bass is caught up in the boycott stuff, or this is caught up in the politics, the identity politics of Bud Light. And it was about Target. The company Target, the store in the United States.
Stocking Pride shirts, I believe.
Stocking shirts with rainbows on them. Yeah. 100%. Because it's Pride. It's fucking June. The caption of the video says, "For those who don't know, Target has been pushing the message of transitioning to young people and teamed up with a Satanist to push pro-Satan clothing and paints to children. The enemy isn't hiding anymore." In the video, the content creator, whose name I will not say because fuck him, says, "No, we are running from that. Instead, expose these things," he says, "to show it to all the people who have ears to hear. This is evil, this is demonic, and we won't stand for it." This is such utter trash and garbage. I can't believe that we are going backwards towards this stuff, that we are allowing a section of society that I had hoped and thought that we had moved well beyond when I was in fucking high school. I thought we were beyond this stuff. I thought we were clear on a path towards this not being a thing that happens in 2023. People like this feeling empowered to speak like this about human beings that just want to live and for the most part be left alone. To be allowed to live the way that they want to live. And unbelievably inexcusable that a Major League Baseball player can share this and then come out and limp dick fucking dribble out a 35-second apology to the Pride community, which is not what anybody calls themselves, and ending with, "I'm going to use the resources to educate myself and make better decisions moving forward, which means I'm not going to share this stuff anymore," basically. Ends with, "The ballpark is for everybody. We want to include all fans at the ballpark. We want to welcome everybody." He may as well have said which dates the tickets were on sale for Pride Day at the stadium and say, "I hope all of you gays still come out to the Pride Day." He may as well have just said that. He may as well have said, "I didn't intend to affect the ticket sales," because you know for a fact he doesn't believe this. He trots out the friends of mine and close family members bullshit.
The fact that both Bass and John Schneider use the term Pride community tells me that that's just bullshit PR speak.
Which we knew it would be, of course.
Of course, but you don't have to be so obvious about it. Like, the as you said, that's not a phrase I had heard before. Maybe it is somewhere. I don't know. Maybe it's an American thing. I doubt it.
It's a marketing deck.
Yeah. No, that's what I mean. And like the fact that, I don't know, everything you said, I agree with, obviously. And I'm not even disappointed in Bass, because we already kind of knew Bass was a shithead. I'm not even disappointed in the organization, because they're a fucking baseball team. Like, it's a bullshit capitalistic enterprise, and like, even their Pride Night, as much as I think it should exist, is still a corporation and Pride Month kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm not disappointed in that. What I am disappointed in is how, like, you know, Mark Shapiro has made a big deal in the last couple of years about how he has no dickheads on his whiteboard when trying to build roster culture. And it's like, so does that just not extend to homophobes? Or like, where is what's your dickhead meter? Is your dickhead meter fucking smiling after a home run and like when you lose a game? Or is your dickhead meter a guy who thinks that a large segment of the population shouldn't exist? Like, it's just so... And the fact that, like, Schneider obviously didn't come out and back Bass's words, but he certainly didn't... I mean, at least he took some fucking questions, but, like, he certainly didn't have any strong words actively condemning it outside of what he has to from a PR standpoint. And the front office, basically invisible on the whole situation, other than saying he's not, you know, being suspended, which is insane. Even if you don't want to just outright cut him, which you should. If this was a just world, any guy who posted anything like that would just be cut and just wouldn't be in baseball anymore. I know that's not how it works. We live in a dumb world where and you can make the free speech argument, but that's also not what fucking free speech means. Like, he can say whatever he wants. He also can face consequences. And I understand there's union stuff with that. But regardless, everyone at every level here seems to have failed. And the fact that, like, the team, watching the game last night, where it literally went from Anthony Bass coming into the game and getting booed by 50,000 people, which was fantastic, and then cut to a commercial for Blue Jays Pride Night next weekend.
Of course.
And it's like, how can this... I mean, I know the answer to this. This is rhetorical. But, like, how can the team, with a straight face, market Pride Night in, like, 8 days and still have this fucking asshole on the team? Like, it's just so incongruous to the whole idea of sports are for everyone. And, like, again, Bass is a right-wing shithead, so, like, it's not surprising. And I'm sure there are guys on the team who are also right-wing shitheads. Actually, we know for a fact that at least two of the guys on the team are right-wing shitheads and probably agree with Bass, but at least they have the good sense to keep their fucking mouths shut.
Yeah, I'm not naive enough to assume that when he came into the clubhouse the next day, everyone was like, wow, man, how can you... I understand. This is an important thing for many reasons, obviously. I think the one that is sticking out for me right now is we're in a different place with this conversation than I had hoped we would be by the time we got to this point in the civilization. We're not in, like, the love is love, everybody wears rainbows part of this. People are being put in danger by these people. There are people whose lives, especially the trans community, but the gay community as well, the bi community as well, the two-spirit community as well, the non-binary community as well. These people are being put in danger right now. And it's these psychophant pieces of shit at the top. These people, your Tomi Lahrens, the people at the top who you know don't really believe it and you know are doing the, like... They are just up there saying this stuff so they can smirk and look at how mad people like you and me get, right? That's the only reason they're doing it. But the danger is, and where this shit is no longer a quote tweet dunk fucking fest, is we are in a place now in society that the people at the bottom who are digesting this stuff are not in on the wink to the camera, are not in on the, hey, we're triggering the libs, are not in on the, what, are you mad? No, they're going out and hurting people. They're going out and killing people. People's lives are being put in danger with this shit. So it's not just Instagram posts, and it's not just, oh, we have our feelings hurt. Real human beings are being made to put in danger with this stuff. And that is why this isn't just something that I think, you know, you're looking at it and you're going to go, oh, it's going to blow over. And I know obviously the first and obvious one that gets brought up, and you sort of thought a little bit, was the Kevin Pillar thing, right? And there's no excusing what Kevin Pillar did either, but it is certainly is different to be in a moment of frustration and turn and swear and say a terrible thing versus go on a thing where you have a huge, huge platform and share this information, this call to arms, this call to action, saying these people are evil. These people don't deserve to have space. It's unprecedented. It's unparalleled. And you are right. Obviously, there is a union thing, but they can fucking cut this guy because he sucks also. No one's like, oh, the guy with the 4.5 ERA, low leverage, don't trust him in the eighth inning of close games guy. They only cut him because he's a homophobe. They cut him because he sucks. Fucking sucks too, by the way. I'm irate about this stuff. And it, like you said, you know, and I'll let you cap this off. My last thing is, I hate when this sort of stuff, you know, we are eyes wide open. We know fucking what we're dealing with here. You said it. It's giant corporations sponsored by giant corporations sponsored by giant corporations. I just hate how often this stuff also lays bare that information, right? It becomes so you're able to sort of, because it entertains you for so many hours a week and brings you this peace and brings you this distraction and brings you this ease and brings you nice memories and makes you remind you of when you were a kid and talking to your dad and family members and friends, and you have all these memories associated with the Blue Jays, and they're all peaceful and they're all great, and this stuff reminds you that it's all a cash grab. It's all a scam. It's owned by the largest telecom in the fucking country. And the only thing they are concerned about with Anthony Bass is whether or not the Pride Night sells out. That is fucking fact. It just is. It's ugly and it's true. And I think it's worth saying, because if they knew that what Anthony Bass did wouldn't affect ticket sales or wouldn't affect their standing in the eye of the public, they would not care less. And maybe they don't care less. He didn't get suspended. He didn't miss a single fucking game. He pitched yesterday. He missed no time. To me, he has resources to do work, which means dick fucking all. So
yeah, and I think that a thing that needs to be, I don't want to say made clear, because I think people know this, or at least people who aren't morons know this. But like, you look at something in terms of him getting cut or whatever. You know, you look at the Roberto Osuna situation, where I think there are people who would look at that and argue, well, they had to trade him because it was a crime and it was violence. And I think what needs to be made more clear for guys like Bass, and this is not limited to the Blue Jays, this is not limited to Bass, this is not limited to baseball, this is not even limited to sports, but I think what needs to be made clear is that when you share shit like Bass shared and you stand behind that garbage, that is violence, and it is harmful. And as you said, this is not just anymore like love is love, be welcome at the ballpark. This is people's daily fucking lives at risk. And when you share stuff like Bass is sharing, and you know, sort of the second wave of that is all the people getting angry at the people telling Bass to fuck off, who then go out and put people's lives at risk. It is not a stretch to say that Bass could have blood on his hands eventually for sharing that stuff. Same as all the other grifters you mentioned. And I think that, you know, we need to stop downplaying how serious this kind of shit is. And it's not just delete your tweets. It's not just don't post dumb shit on social media, although it's that too.
Yep.
But it's not just a dumb guy shared a dumb thing. And it's very clear for a myriad of reasons, whether that's capitalism or the corporations, as you said, which I guess is capitalism, or selling tickets, which I guess is also capitalism. But it's not just, you know, oh, we're talking to him and he's going to do the requisite work and whatever. Like, it has to be treated more seriously than that. And it's not about whataboutism. It's not about if he had posted X instead of Y. It's just, as you said, right now, in 2023, on June 1st, as we sit here, you and I, whose lives are not at risk, people's lives are at risk. And every time someone in a prominent position, like Anthony Bass, which, like, yeah, he sucks on the mound, but he's still a professional fucking athlete who is in a position and has a platform and is all these things. Every time one of these chuds posts some dumb shit like this, it not only exacerbates the problem, but it just contributes to more violence, more downfall, more hate, more people feeling unsafe, more people feeling unwelcome. And, like, I was very happy to see that he got booed last night. I was surprised at how, for the most part, obviously with some notable exceptions, the Toronto media has handled this, in that where the team seems eager to let Bass off with a slap on the wrist. Much of the Toronto media, including some Rogers-owned media, have been less excited to move past this as quickly as possible. But it's just, it's ugly and it's wrong. And it, as you say, just recolors or reminds us what professional sports are all about. And it's not the majesty of the game. And it's certainly not, if you build it, they will come. It is, there cannot be acceptance of this shit anymore. We've all seen what can happen too many times. And it's just, like, you just can't have it. And you can't have them on the team. And the longer they do, and, like, maybe the front office is currently working up a way to trade him and get rid of him, and, like, fine, but also just cut him. But it's, the longer this goes on, the longer he's on the team, the less leg the team has to stand on to not only throw a pride night, but just, like, represent the city. Because, like, Toronto's got a lot of problems, but it's, we are not a city that stands for this kind of shit. Or we shouldn't be, I guess. And, there's just no room for it and no place for it. And everyone who just wants to move past, and everyone who wants to give him a free pass and say, you know, he apologized in the biggest fucking air quotes possible. Like, it's just, it's not good enough. And the team's not handling it good enough. And they either represent all of their fans or they represent none, as far as I'm concerned.
I think that's, clears it out. We will take a quick pause. Maybe we'll come back, talk about the on-field team and how they continue to roll forward in just one moment. All right, Jake, all that garbage aside, the Blue Jays are back in action. When they're playing against Central teams, it almost doesn't feel like baseball. It's almost like this is, we're watching them practice, sort of. We're watching, it's hard. It's been really hard to get a gauge on this team right now, to me, because they play Minnesota and Milwaukee, and you're just sort of assuming they're winning these games because those teams are bad. And then you're like, well, I don't even know what to feel about this. I don't even know what weight to give these wins. Do you feel that way? Am I alone in this? That I just, no, like, I almost have no idea what to even make of them. Like, of course they beat teams in the Central. Why wouldn't they go 2-3 against the Twins and 2-3 against the Brewers? Those teams are not real teams.
No, I completely agree with you. I feel exactly the same. And it's making, I remember this came up around this time last year, as well. Whereas, like, they can't beat the good teams. They can only beat the bad teams. And, like, that can probably get you close to 90 wins these days.
Sure can. Sure can.
But, unfortunately, as we've said a million times, so it does for the rest of the division. But, yeah, I'm with you. I don't know how to gauge. This is maybe unfair, but I think you'll know what I mean. In that, when guys are bad against these teams and don't perform against these teams, that, I think, is somewhat instructive.
Yeah, what we think. Yes.
Like, I don't know if that's fair to say, and I don't know if it holds true the other way. Like, if
right.
guys, like, I'm not saying Kevin Gausman isn't great, because he is, but, like, Kevin Gausman striking out 11 Brewers today doesn't teach me much about Kevin Gausman. Alek Manoah continuing to struggle against the Brewers kind of does tell me something about Alek Manoah, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I agree. I assumed Manoah was the person you were talking about when you mentioned that very thing. Yeah, I mean, the Manoah thing, we talked about it last week in the three different buckets. Real problem, definitely real problem zone, leading the league in walks in the bad way. Oh, it's tough. It's a tough watch. And we're getting into, with Manoah, unfortunately, we're getting a little close to what we went through last year with Berríos, where if he gives up two runs early in the game, you're like, oh, he's at it again. When it's like, oh, two runs, you'd take a two-run outing from almost every one of your pitchers. Mm-hmm. More often than not, like the 4-2 loss the other day.
He gave up two.
I mean, listen, his control was an issue. He walked a ton of guys. He wasn't especially competitive. He only gives up the 1-2-run home run. But, I mean, yeah, three walks, three hits. It didn't look like he was, just the one tough luck. It looked like he was sort of lucky that he was playing such a bad team to get into that spot. It has not been pretty. That is for damn sure.
I think a large issue with Manoah that I know is being talked about a little bit, and I think it's a fair point, but just the, like, there's nothing wrong with, like, sending a guy down to figure out his stuff. Roy Halladay did it, so I'm not gonna say that it's instructive of anything, but the way the team is constructed, they literally can't send him down to figure out his shit because there's no one to take his spot. The only guy who was supposed to maybe be there was Mitch White, who's getting absolutely shelled in his rehab starts. And it just, like, I feel for Manoah a lot because he seems to really be going through it, trying to, like, place what's going on and what's going wrong. I thought his very honest presser after the game yesterday was quite wonderful in its sadness. Just, like, it was just very honest, and I think it was a great, and he had some good quotes about it. But I kind of feel for him in the sense that, like, there's kind of nothing to be done at the moment because he kind of unfortunately doesn't have a choice but to just, like, fight through it until I guess they decide to give Trevor Richards an opener game or Ryu comes back. Like, I don't know what the option is.
I might think about juggling the order these guys go in right now because I don't know that him back-to-back with Kikuchi is a good recipe right now. Yeah, Zach Thompson is on the 40-man. His ERA at AAA is currently 7.62. Yosfer Zulueta, we had talked last year, but maybe being a guy who comes in late in the bullpen, he is still stretched out as a starter. His ERA is 5.11. I think Bowden Francis is an option, not currently on the 40-man. The ERA is 3.45 in 15 innings. There's a chance there. But, yeah, as you said, Mitch White getting knocked around again today. I think 40 pitches in an inning and a third is not pretty. It is not going well. And it's again, we've talked about this week in, week out. It's very thin. It's a very thin margin right now. If goodness forbid, one of the pitchers goes down, that's curtains. 10.13 ERA right now for Mitch White at AAA in the rehab. Cool. Starts, five appearances, three starts. That is not what you want, decidedly. It's an issue. It's an issue. It's not an easy one to solve either. I mean, you don't have your defensive catcher back there. Kirk's done a pretty good job. He's sort of sort of starting to turn up a little bit at the plate, and I thought did some good work in the most recent outing. But yikes, it is tough. It is very tough to watch. As you said, sort of, you know, he's very honest, and he's always been a hard on the sleeve guy. And you saw that him being really fired up last year, and now this year, geez, you can see him really going through it and really see him battling it. It's damn tough to watch, and not a fun turn every fifth day. Thank God Kevin Gausman is fucking amazing.
It's also kind of, I'm not going to say odd, but it's unfortunate that going into this year, the big, big question was, will Bassett live up to the contract? Will Kikuchi be any good? Will Berríos be any good? And now the rotations, for the most part, has been pretty solid, except for the one guy we were like, ah, he'll be fine.
The no doubt ace, yeah, the workhorse. Yeah,
it's unfortunate, and you hope he gets together. Like, I kind of think the best thing for him really is like one of those Ryu White somebody guys is able to just take some starts from him. You know, even not necessarily sending him down, just giving Manoah some, I guess, easier reps or just some time to get his head straight, which again, that's not a bad thing. Many great pitchers go through this early in their careers, but it's just unfortunate that he is currently on a squad that does not have that ability to give to him.
Yeah. I think your other overarching storylines on the team right now, Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s power outage continues, just hasn't had good at bats for 2.5 weeks straight, maybe more. I think that tweak of the knee, maybe. Yeah. I'm starting to buy that the tweak of the knee was more than a tweak of the knee, and that he is gutting it out because Ernie Clement is currently on the bench.
Yes. Again, more depth problems. As our friend Jonah tweeted the other day, since the MRI on his knee on May 17th, Vlad has a 5.33 OPS with a 50% ground ball rate.
Oui.
His one home run over that span, which came off a position player.
Yeah, did it ever though?
But like, I think the knee is probably, you know, it's probably a valid thing. And as you said, like, there's just nobody else to do the job.
And he's also sort of not able to take a lot of DH reps, right? Because you're still cycling George through there. You're still cycling Brandon Belt through there. So he's also not even taking off time in the field. It's not great. It's not what you want. It's pretty concerning. It's also been tough to watch. These guys struggling. It's tough. It's tough out there. It's just the way it goes, right? He's also just so happened to have been in a ton of big at-bats and a ton of big spots now that he can't hit for power at all.
But I mean, that happens when you're hitting game. Third. That's what happens.
That's Sorry. True. And he is like, hitting behind Bo Bichette, who has been unbelievable. The best player on the team, not particularly close. One of the best players in the league. He is 329, 366, 521, 147 WRC+, 2.5 wins on Fangraphs. Even Jake, positive defensively via Fangraphs.
I gotta 11 say,
home runs.
I feel like Bo's defense now, it's the thing you pointed out about Berríos when he gives up two runs. You're like, ugh. Bo will be like, not perfect, but like relatively good at short for a month, and then he makes one error, and you're like, this fucking guy. And I'm as guilty as anybody, but like he's been solid. He's been more than solid. He's been excellent.
He's not striking out. He's not swinging and missing. He is crushing the ball. He is hitting the ball to all fields. A ton of opposite field singles and doubles. A ton of home runs. He's been an absolute pleasure to watch every day. 25-year-old, absolute effing stud, top percentage of the league in everything you could possibly want him to be. Crushing fastballs, crushing sinkers, crushing curveballs, crushing changeup. You can't throw this guy anything right now. It's been really exciting because when we talked season preview, we had mentioned, you know, 2 years in a row, sort of Bo salvages a year with a really strong back half. What would it be like if he was on fire the whole year? It looks like he could be a fucking one of the best players in baseball. And over the last I don't even know. You go back to the end of last year, probably your last 100 to 120 games. He's been unbelievably good. So what a treasure. What a joy to watch game in, game out. He's really, really come into his own as an all-around hitter. It's been a real pleasure as somebody that, you know, you mentioned your frustrations with him defensively here and there. I know last year when it was really low in the middle of the year last year when he was like, OPS was like in the sixes. I remember being like, man, there's just some at bats that he just gives away where it's just like he just isn't in that at bat. It doesn't look like at all mentally. That has just not happened this year. He has been all over everything, up and down, no problem. A real joy and a real pleasure, and a reminder that he's only 25, right? We sort of, I think, the very dumb and casual trade Vlad discourse that permeated sort of, not I'm gonna say discourse, but like some people were sort of floating it. You saw more people refuting it than you saw them supporting it. A reminder, I think, here from Bo Bichette of like Vlad's 24, which is like crazy. Like if you were, there's no, you can say, oh, they should trade Vlad for prospects. Take that stupid angle. If one of your prospects was playing in the major leagues at current slumping Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s numbers level at 24, you'd be like, holy shit. We have a guy with a 124 WRC plus at age 24. Doesn't happen. There's like five of those guys in the whole league right now. So pump the brakes on trade Vlad for prospects.
I think that's the big Vlad question right now. No one, again, smart, is questioning whether Vlad is good. The question is whether Vlad is great. And yes, that's a very different, yeah. That's a very different conversation than Vlad is bad, pardon the rhyme. Like, there's no part of me that doesn't think you should extend Vladimir Guerrero forever. It's just a question of how much do you pay him.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's interesting, right? You look at, we'll use pure hitting, right? We'll take away the sort of defensive, the war calculation. He's on your second page of the leaderboards. He's 48th in the league, just above Sal Perez, just below Andrew McCutchen, below guys like Ian Happ, above guys like Brian Reynolds. Rowdy Tellez, sadly, is much closer than you would want him to be to this. That's for the whole league. But again, to my point is, if you filter this as age, guys 24 and under, you know, he's still among the best names in the league. It's just rare that a guy is this young and this good. But I do see the point of like, he's in his fourth season now. Is he a 124 WRC plus guy? Is he a top? Is he 24? Is he a top 50 hitter, or is he a top 5 hitter? Those are two very different things in terms of what you pay and who a guy is. It's gonna be the question of this team. And I thought Old Reliable, our old pal Andrew Stoughton, wrote a great piece this week. I thought about the Jays offseason and how it actually is going to be sort of tricky and sort of confusing in terms of hitting the luxury tax walls. In terms of they're probably going to have to replace Chapman. They're probably going to have to replace maybe Merrifield, or you bring Merrifield back on an option. You're probably going to have to get another outfielder. You're probably going to have to get more relievers. Like, there's a lot of things that they're going to have to get, and they're not really dumping a lot of significant salary. I guess Hyunjin Ryu is coming off the books, but there's a lot of committed salary for the next couple of years, even before your Vladimir Guerrero extension. And the free agent market isn't especially lucrative, and none of the prospects are playing especially well. So it's going to be a tricky course here as these guys enter 24 and 25, and after 25, they're free agents. It's going to be a tricky course the next two seasons to figure out how to maximize this team, and it certainly isn't the way they're doing it right now. I think they're a good team. I think Vlad, not to make him the talisman for the entire team, but the Vlad question right now to me is the Blue Jays question. Are they a 124 WRC plus team? Are they a 90-win team? Or are they a 97-win team? Are they a contender? Are they great, or are they good? I think it's sort of your defining question of the year, and what it will mean for both Vlad and the team if the answer is not the one that we have been hoping for.
Yeah, and I think that's correct.
That is correct. Thank you, Jake. I love to hear that. My favorite words to hear. We'll park it there. We'll take a quick stop. We'll get a little off topic here in a moment. Catch on the other side.
Baseball, get out of here. It's time to get off topic. Baseball, get out of here. It's time to get off topic.
Okay, it is time for mailbag time. The first one comes from Mike Mack. How many homers will Vladdy hit at home this year? Current pace is zero.
Where are we? June 1st?
June 1st.
They've played. Let's pull up those old standing counts again.
We're about a third of the way through, as you established.
No, I want to see how far they are at home. Because they were on the road for 2 weeks because of the construction. So they have played 25 games at home. So there is almost 60 games left at home. No, my God, my math is so bad. Almost 70 games. No, yes, almost 60 games left at home.
Yeah, yeah.
And he has zero. I'm going to say seven.
He can hit 10. He can hit 10. He can hit 10. There's gonna be 1 3-game homestand where he hits four, I think.
I mean, there has to be, right?
There must be. The other part of this, and we just doomsayed on the Patreon part. There is a part of this where they go, you know what? Vlad's more hurt than we thought a week from now, and he goes away for 10 days.
Yeah.
And then we really see what's up, because that would be bad news bears.
I forgot. I meant to say one positive thing about the team that surprised me this week, speaking of standings, in that in everything this week, both on and off the field, there has been a huge feeling of like, man, this is just getting really close to over. They're like 4 games back, the wild card game.
That's right.
It's crazy.
Oh yeah. I'm going to say 10 for Vlad. It's wishful thinking. Geez, you'd like to think 30 home runs for the guy is like an absolute floor. I know maybe I'm behind, right? Maybe I'm still clutching a version of a guy that doesn't exist, but geez.
Yeah, I just feel like, as you said earlier, like he's still not hitting terribly. There's just no power. So like, it's hard to be in that mindset of, oh, he's going to go on a huge hot streak when like he's not like awful right now. He's just not hitting home runs, which makes me think that like that streak of hitting like 15 and 10 games, something just might not be coming.
And he has struggled again since we talked about it before. The knee tweak has.
Yeah.
It's not been great.
So I'm going to say 7 to answer the question.
John McDee, is it okay to call Kirk the captain again? He's been pretty, he's been pretty okay. He's hitting line drives again. It's all line drives with him, right? I mean, the walk rate always sustained, but if there was anybody in the league you would want to walk, he is the guy. So be it. Yeah, it's nice to see because he's an important piece, especially as we see Jano on the shelf, and you know, third catchers being what they are.
Jano always seems to get hurt right when he's figuring it out, doesn't he?
It's the curse, and then listen, that's being a catcher. But yes, if you were going to knock Jano, it's easy to look at the durability piece. It basically happens every year. That's part of being a catcher, but it does sort of seem to bite him at the worst possible times. So he'll hit a bunch of home runs, and then that'll be the day that his groin rips off of his body. I think that's fair to do. We get into a little more baseball-y. James Nielsen asked us, there was an excellent post going around yesterday about Manoah's mechanics. If you can't fix them during the season, would you consider slowly stretching out Pearson so you have a bit of an insurance in September if you don't want Manoah pitching in meaningful games? Didn't mention this in the baseball part earlier, but another big thread of this week, Nate Pearson looks fucking awesome.
I'm so happy for him. Like, just
I wouldn't be touching Nate Pearson right now. Right now, he is on the trust tree, which we love to do. Nate Pearson might be top spot on the trust tree in terms of the bullpen. I wouldn't be moving him anywhere but into the eighth inning. And maybe right now, honestly, maybe seventh, eighth inning guy. If he's a multiple inning, high-level reliever, that's really valuable. And I know it seems silly to be like a multi-inning, high-level reliever is more valuable than a starting pitcher, but they do, like, they have three guys that, if, like, you could go Bassett, Gausman, Berríos, and then survive, and then go back to Gausman on short rest if you really, really got desperate in the playoff series or in meaningful stuff. I would be, the only place I'd be moving Pearson is into higher leverage situations. He looks fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, I completely agree. I was going to say the only place I would, if we're talking like major upgrades, in like from where he is to starter, say, would be the opposite. I'd be looking at the closer role. But sure, obviously he's got to prove himself as the eighth inning guy first. Like, you're not going to move him from where he is to the closer role straight line. And also, Romano hasn't been bad enough to warrant that conversation. But if Pearson keeps looking like this, for a guy that throws the style he does and the mix of pitches he does and the velocity he does, he's going to start forcing that question eventually if this keeps up.
Trust tree update. Might I even suggest that Trevor Richards is the top limb?
I think he is. Top limb guy? I think he is. It's crazy. And, like, I'm waiting for it to not be the case at any moment. But as things stand right now, yeah, Trevor Richards is on the tree for sure.
Third rung? Where you have?
I think I probably have them second rung right now.
Top rung is
Swanson and Pearson.
Second rung is
Romano and Richards. And then everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, I know you love to hate. You were like, I knew Mesa would be bad as he gives up his third run of the season, 60 games in.
Sure, but earned run, though. Mesa has given up quite a few inherited runners.
It's true. It's a fact. People forget. Paul Adam with a question I love to see. Is there a type of Jays offseason acquisition you just hate the most? Is it power bat that's totally cooked, middle infielder who can't hit, outfielder who's always injured, pitcher who turns out to be exactly as dog shit as he looks, or reliever who was once good 4 years ago? It's the pitcher who is exactly as dog shit as he looks. And I hate to, I don't want to call this we'll call it the Tanner Roark arc of, like, we knew Roark was shit. We knew it wasn't going to work. We knew they were going to sign him anyway. When you're talking yourself into Tyler Chatwood, when you're talking yourself into, who is the other guy? Chase Anderson. They were addicted to those guys.
Clay Buckles.
Addicted to those guys. And you could, if you wanted to be harsh, you could even count Kikuchi among this, right? Where he basically has zero good seasons. And they were like, yeah, but what if we figure the one thing out? And they never figured the one thing out.
Yeah, I think that's mine too. I also kind of want to say, like, hitter reclamation project, but I also kind of love those, because on the rare occasion where it works out, it's awesome. But for the most part, when it's like, oh, we're gonna trade for this, like, nothing utility guy. Like, it's the who was it last year? I forget. But there's been a couple of them where it's like, you know, he's always been a bad hitter, but maybe this year. It's basically, I guess, the hitting equivalent of that pitcher is really the answer.
Anytime you're getting an acquisition, and you're like, ooh, he could be a usable 4 or 5. It's like, ugh.
Like the guys who get cut by, like, the Pirates, and they're like, maybe.
Yeah, there was a round of DFA/cuts this last week that I was like, should I even bring up the fact that Aaron Hicks got DFA'd? And the answer is no.
Oh, buddy, if we want to talk guys, Cole Calhoun coming.
Cole Calhoun, somebody else got released this week, and I was like, really?
Hicks got I think Baltimore picked up Hicks.
Right, not surprised. Somebody else was a minor leaguer that never got called up, but has, like, I don't think it was a catcher. I think there's a minor league catcher that got cut. Not Gary Sanchez, but a different guy.
Look, all I'm saying is that the Jays outfield and bench is such a mess that I would welcome Cole Calhoun.
Oh, it was Jorge Alfaro.
Oh, really?
Opted out of his Red Sox deal. Depth piece.
I would take either of those guys over Nathan Lucas and maybe Kevin Biggio.
He's a catcher, but he got a great arm. He's hitting 320 in the minor leagues.
Cole Calhoun, OPSing 920 in AAA.
Crazy. I mean, crazy.
It just might work.
What? Right? Right?
Again,
is it any better than...
Exactly. Is that 26-man slot giving us anything more?
Okay, some... we've got two more here, and one I definitely want to end on. And a nice message from a Brewers fan says, looking forward to the rubber match against y'all. Your post, for all the negativity, you got some people that really seem to be right thinking.
Yeah, folks, a lot of good, I got on board. Good, like, fans of other teams being on board. And, like, also, I feel like at least half of the chuds that were against it aren't real people.
I have to agree. So here we go.
A lot of numbers in usernames.
Rand Sobel says, hey, I'm a Mets fan, but Blue Jays appreciator. Welcome aboard. How do you think they match up this weekend? Do you think Bassett will struggle going back to Citi Field for the first time since the playoffs? His last month of starts for the Mets were atrocious, and the stadium noise seemed to bother him. We'll see. He's calling his own pitches, so we'll see how that changes. He has had a really good run in the beginning of May. His last two starts haven't quite been up to that standard. I do see this end of this here makes a lot of sense to me. Of the stadium noise seemed to bother him. He does strike me as a guy a little bit like Steven Matz, where it's like if he looks like he's been rattled by something, it can sometimes be sort of hard for him to shake that. I think it'll be interesting. It's hard to gauge because, again, we talked earlier in the show, outside of the American League East, it's been really hard to gauge what the quality of this team and the quality of the teams they're playing. I think the Mets should be a fun, good matchup, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Bassett struggle. I'm sort of banking on him being good. He's been good for the most part when he's gotten the opportunities. He's fought the pitch clock a little bit, so we'll see if the stadium noise and the pitch clock battles him. But I think with him calling his own pitches on PitchCom, he'll hopefully be able to overcome. But I think, in general, it should be favorable for him.
I actually think the Jays and the Mets match up pretty well in the sense that I kind of look at them as two peas in a pod in a lot of ways.
Yes, they're both images.
Both teams that spent a lot of money, both teams that are underachieving, or maybe not, I guess. Both teams that only have like four or five guys that can really hit this year. And both teams that have some great pitchers and some question mark pitchers. I don't know. I think they're an interesting matchup because I just think they're both of a similar type, and also in their respective divisions in a similar type. The Mets just have obviously less amount of teams to contend with, but I think it's a good matchup. I think that also neither fan base, whether it be the Jays fans or the Mets fans, really know what to make of either of their teams right now.
And they're both happy to completely hate their team if they have to.
Yes. Also, Mets had a great-looking dogs at the ballpark game yesterday. I saw my friend's Instagram, which looked really fun. A lot of cute dogs just hanging out, watching baseball. It's good stuff.
Final question comes from our friend Kara. A great question to close the show on. What are your favorite organizations and charities supporting the LGBTQ+ community? For me, the 519. Well, I love the name, of course, being a 519er, but they do great work and have since the mid-70s. There's a great spot downtown Toronto, I believe, that is a haven for folks and have been around for a very long time doing the work, being supportive, being good. Wonderful outlet for people. Pride every day. 1976, I'm looking at it right here. But yeah, love the big fan of the 519 in terms of the great job they do.
Yeah, the 519 are amazing. They are, especially locally, I don't want to say number one because I don't want to rank charities, but 519 do amazing work. And as you said, I've done it for a really long time. I've always been a good presence in Toronto. PFLAG Canada does a lot of good work. Outsports Toronto does some good work. Or Outsport, I forget what the actual nomenclature is. I want to make sure I get the name right here because I don't know if this really counts as a charity, but a good organization to support, which is No Pride in Policing, keeping cops out of Pride. It's a group of queer and trans people formed to support Black Lives Matter Toronto, focus on defunding and abolishing police. Queer Momentum does some good work. That's an advocacy group. Yeah, I guess those that's a good list. But 519 is a Toronto institution, you would say. And despite ourselves, shout out Marcus Stroman for posting today that that's the he's doing a Pride charity drive in each of the three cities that he's pitched in, and he is donating money and raising awareness for the 519. So good for him.
Yes, and with that, we remind you that it is Pride Month officially, and as we head into Pride, remember, Pride exists because of the hard work and advocacy efforts of radicalized trans women. Pride is fun. Pride is fabulous. Pride is political. Pride is joyful resistance. The first Pride was a riot. So
yeah, Pride is a protest.
Pride is a protest. Fists up in the air. No cops at Pride. It is not a corporate thing. It is a fucking movement. So if you are listening to this and you are new because of the strong statement that we were able to make on social media, we thank you. We love you. We welcome you. We want nothing but the best in your safety and security. We have your backs. You can rely on us to
and help also you. For our for non-new people, for new people, as we were just talking about all these organizations, you know, the best way to tell Anthony Bass to go fuck himself is to donate to those organizations and do work and action to help make Toronto and the world a safer, more welcoming place for all queer people. That's not saying you have to give money to do that, but that kind of work is the best way to combat pieces of shit like Anthony Bass.
Hell yeah. Thank you. We love you. That is it for another week. We'll be back next week. We'll take a quick glance here. The Blue Jays schedule. I usually have it up, but I forgot to pull it up in front of me. It is the Mets this weekend, as was teased in that color, and it doesn't get any easier. It's the Houston Astros Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at the Rogers Center. They are back for another homestand. The Astros 32-23. And the Mets 30-27. Jake, that's the exact same record of the Blue Jays. Any guess as to where the Mets are in the National League East?
I believe they're second, are they not?
That is correct. That is just the way it goes. We'll talk to you then. check out the Patreon, patreon.com/lessthanjays. Have some stuff going to be start doing in June now that the studio is ready to go. And we owe you a trivia night, so that is coming as well, hopefully in the course of this month. That is it for another episode. Thank you so much, as always, for being a part of Less Than Jays.